The state's facing an unprecedented fiscal challenge, and the governor wants to make sure that there's enough time to address what's coming.
The Walker administration prepares a rare State of the Budget speech. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 16th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, animating the bowhead whale migration.
The real trick, of course, is getting whales animated, getting them moving, not just like an artist who wants them to move, but moving like whales actually move.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Subsistence is important to many rural Alaskans. Please consider applying for a 3-year term on your Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. Councils provide information and recommendations to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. Apply by January 23, 2015. Call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence at fws.gov for more information. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The U.S. Supreme Court has decided to hear 4 same-sex marriage cases and will rule on the constitutionality of same-sex marriage bans by early summer. A federal court decision made same-sex marriage legal in Alaska in October. The Parnell administration started the appeals process for that decision. The Walker administration had been debating whether or not to continue with the appeal. But Corey Mills with the Department of Law says the Supreme Court's decision to make a final ruling on same-sex marriage bans preempted the Walker administration. Attorney General Craig Richards issued a statement saying he will ask the Ninth Circuit to put a hold on Alaska's appeal until after the Supreme Court makes a final ruling. Mills says same-sex couples in Alaska can continue to marry as the case proceeds through the court system. The Supreme Court denied the state's request for a stay on same-sex marriages last fall. Pot, privacy, and Arctic policy are all issues the Alaska legislature may take up this session. Lawmakers submitted 23 early bills today after having pre-filed more than 60 pieces of legislation last week. A bill from Representative Paul Seaton, a Homer Republican, could delay the sale of marijuana concentrates and food products that contain them until the end of 2016. The bill contains intent language noting the difficulty of regulating these substances in states that have already legalized marijuana. Representative Bob Lynn, an Anchorage Republican, has filed a voter ID bill that would require Alaskans to display a driver's license or other photo ID when going to their polling station. Lynn has introduced 2 similar bills in the past, but neither have made it to the House floor for a vote. The legislature gavels in for business on Tuesday. It's been almost a decade since a governor has delivered a State of the Budget address. With Alaska now in deficit spending mode, Governor Bill Walker plans to bring the speech back. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
The last State of the Budget address was delivered by Governor Frank Murkowski in 2006. That year, Alaska was looking at a $1 billion surplus, and lawmakers needed to decide what to do with the extra revenue. There was a chance to buy a stake in the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline and put money toward a natural gas project. Jim Clark was the governor's chief of staff then, and he says their office was in an exceptional situation.
We wanted to talk about that because we were closing in on a deal with the producers.
Now, the State of the Budget speech is being revived under a different sort of exceptional situation. Oil is less than half the value it was a year ago, and the state is looking at a multi-billion-dollar budget shortfall as a result.
This is that kind of year. Far worse than our administration had it.
The State of the Budget address can be delivered separately from the State of the State speech, but it isn't done very often. It's logistically more challenging because it means getting the legislature in one room on 2 nights back to back. It also means hoping the public turns on the radio or television to hear speeches 2 nights in a row. In the past 15 years, it's only been done once. Grace Jang, a spokesperson for the governor, says the current budget realities make 2 speeches, one this coming Wednesday and one on Thursday, necessary.
The state's facing an unprecedented fiscal challenge, and the governor wants to make sure that there's enough time to address what's coming and to communicate to Alaskans just how dire the situation is.
Chang won't use the term crisis. The administration is trying to avoid panic language, but she says the state of the budget address isn't making a comeback just because the administration thought it was a nice tradition.
Is it going to happen again? Is there going to be another state of the budget speech in coming years? Hard to say.
Walker has currently offered the legislature a placeholder budget. He submitted a version drafted by his predecessor, without changes and without endorsement, in December to meet a deadline. But he has advised the legislature that he will offer a seriously revised budget sometime before the drop-dead date of February 18th. Walker has also asked his commissioners to look at how their agencies would manage cuts of up to 8%.
Hey, we have no idea right now. The administration hasn't told us that they're going to provide us with anything dealing with the budget yet.
That's House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Nikiski Republican. His office had questions about Walker's request to give a state of the budget address without actually having provided the legislature a budget to work off of. The speaker also requested that the legislature's research staff produce a timeline of when the governor has provided separate speeches to find out how unusual the request was. Chenault says the legislature plans to start work on the budget shortly after they gavel in, adding that he would like direction on the governor's budget sooner rather than later.
We'll wait to hear both the speeches and, hopefully get a direction from the governor on which direction he would like to go.
According to Walker's budget director, Pat Pitney, the administration is not planning to have a finalized document by the state of the budget address, but will have set target spending levels for each state agency. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Most APRN stations will broadcast the governor's State of the Budget Address Thursday at 7 p.m. An entrepreneurial spirit drove a public forum on future Matanuska-Susitna Borough marijuana laws Thursday night. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, there's no shortage of ideas as to how to deal with legal pot in the valley.
The Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assembly is considering drafting an ordinance establishing marijuana regulations. To that end, the mayors of the three cities within the borough and the Matsu Borough Mayor collectively called for public input on the proposed legislation. With many of the legal aspects of the state's new marijuana law still to be defined, Palmer Mayor Delina Johnson cautioned.
This is something we have to take control of before it gets away from us at a higher level.
The four mayors and borough attorney listened for about 2.5 hours and may have been surprised at what they heard. Unlike the passionate pre-election arguments for or against legalization, those who spoke Thursday were focused on taking full advantage of marijuana-related business opportunities. Wasilla's Sarah Williams.
First thing I'd like to address is the coexistence of the cultivation, production, and dispensary facilities under one roof. The reason for this is to be able to control from seed to sale for the consumer protection.
David Holt praised the valley's potential pot crop.
We have an opportunity to make this safer because it already exists. We have a thriving marijuana industry here right now. The valley is actually world-renowned for its marijuana.
Houston Lodge owner Ellie Locks wants limited entry.
We need to make residency of Alaska and the different cities and boroughs very important before we release any permits.
But Justin Rowland took a laissez-faire attitude.
Why would we put a lottery on something and only allow so many permits and only allow so many people to do it? Please do not limit this. Please do not allow only so many permits. Let the consumers make the market and set the price.
Questions were raised about insurance requirements and fair taxation for fledgling businesses, and many at the forum were adamant about keeping out-of-staters away from a potentially lucrative industry. Many exploring the possibility of pot-related businesses wanted an exclusive Alaska resident-only clause for future growers and dispensaries. Holly Lee.
In Colorado, there was a lot of California cannabis brought in And I want to see Alaskans be able to provide the hemp and the cannabis for our own state and our own industry.
Conrad Daly with the Alaska Cannabis Growers Association wants a distinction for rules governing commercial and hobby growers. Bruce Schulte with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation focused on hemp.
With regard to hemp, I think this part of the state is uniquely set up to capitalize on that commercial market. It is a different product, and my understanding is that a bill that will be brought forth in front of the legislature will address hemp as a separate activity, and I'm hoping that it'll pass because I think that would be a great opportunity for some of the farmers in the valley.
This week, Senator Johnny Ellis, a Democrat from Anchorage, pre-filed a bill that would make hemp an agricultural product in Alaska. The Barrow Assembly takes up the proposed legislation along with a resolution creating a marijuana advisory committee at its meeting next week. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, mushers prepare for an icy K-300.
And I got a big team, physical team. They're not little peewee ice dogs, man. These are muskox.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
A new film produced by the university's Museum of the North in Fairbanks seeks to reveal the secrets of the undersea migration life of whales. The animated film is called A Year in the Life of the Bowhead Whale. The film features English, Inupiaq, and St. Lawrence Island Yupik narration.
With the ocean, we encounter a whole new planet with all new rules. There's no easy way to study the teeming creatures that live beneath the surface of the sea.
Roger Topp heads up digital media at the museum. He wrote and directed the film. He told APRN's Lori Townsend the project started 4 years ago and was inspired by the linear passage of time.
Steve Okunin, our producer, the faculty member at the School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, made a calendar. And I believe it was for 2012. He made a calendar about bowhead whales, and each month talked about some other aspect of whale observation from a perspective of a different scientist or a different community member. And we took that calendar and we made that, you know, an outline for the film. And he worked the calendar in such that it's a year in the life of the whale. And so you look at January and then February and wherever he could, where the whales would be and what they're doing and what we know about the whales at this time of year.
How did you figure out how to do the realistic type of animation for not only the bowheads themselves, but also their underseas landscape or seascape that would vary dramatically in their long migration? How did you go about recreating that?
We definitely started with things we already knew. We had an exhibit here on energy a few years back, and we produced some animations of machinery on the seafloor that would measure current. So we had an idea of how to do the lighting and the water effects for things happening underwater. And we've done a fair amount of fluid simulations for other projects. And so we took those few things we knew how to do and said, yes, we can have a whale on the surface. Yes, we can have whales underwater. Here are the issues we're going to have. So the environment stuff, I think we had a really good handle on going in. The real trick, of course, is getting whales animated, getting them moving, not just like an artist who wants them to move, but moving like whales actually move.
So your end result was very realistic looking whales, not cartoon whales.
Yep, that's the approach.
What do you want the audience that will be seeing this animated production about a year in the life of bowhead whales? What do you want them to take away from this? What are you hoping that they will learn from watching this film?
I want everyone to see the film. I don't want you to watch it in English, and I want you to you know, take away those the bullet points. You know, what is it about these whales that's important? And then I'd like everyone to go and watch it again in Inupiat, and I want people to watch it in St. Lawrence on UPIC, because one of the best things we did with this project was creating three different language tracks, and the film is going to be freely distributed online in both standard and high definition formats, and the links will be through our website at the museum. And so you can go and you can watch the film in these formats, because the communities are such an integral part of the project. You know, these are their whales. And when we went and talked to the communities, the passion they exhibited in the whales and the importance of a film being made about the whales. And sure, they're very picky at times about what we were portraying, but the passion is there, and I think we made some really good choices with the languages in the film, and I'd like people to listen to it in the various languages. Sit back and listen.
Roger Topp wrote and directed A Year in the Life of the Bowhead Whale. The premiere is this evening at the Museum of the North Auditorium in Fairbanks. 25 mushers are set to begin racing tonight from Bethel to Aniak and back in the 36th running of the Kuskokwim 300. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
After a couple winter warm-ups and little snow, this year's trail follows the truck road on the river almost exclusively to Aniak and back. They're cutting out the loop near Whitefish Lake. That trail is expected to be icy and fast. Aaron Burmeister of Nanana and Nome isn't fazed by a slick trail.
One year it could be deep snow and a whiteout blizzard. The next year it could be open water. Next year, glare ice. So right now, from what I'm seeing, this is favorable conditions. I've been here 7 times, and this is one of the better years of trail conditions that I've seen.
Crews from several Kuskokwim villages work together to clear a large, jumbled section of ice resulting from a November breakup. Mushers say that vehicle traffic has further improved the trail. In any case, defending champion Roan Boozer says after running in little snow around Big Lake, his team is ready for a hard trail.
We've been training on that pretty much all year, so I mean, maybe not quite as icy as it's going to be. It'll probably be a little bit harder footing, but we've had pretty firm, pretty hard packed trails, so they're used to running on that.
The race mileage was estimated at 260 to 270 miles at the mushers meeting Thursday. 8 of the top 10 mushers from 2014 return, including 9-time champion Jeff King.
You know, I'm not sure my team is the fastest. In fact, I'm quite sure it's not. But there won't be anybody with more depth of conditioning. And I got a big team, physical team. They're not little peewee ice dogs, man. These are muskox. But they're fast muskox.
Veteran Yukon Quest and Iditarod musher Brent Sass is in Bethel for his first K300.
I'm excited to see new country. I don't really have a whole lot of concerns. I mean, I have to be aware that I don't lose the trail, but it sounds like they've marked the trail pretty well. So I'm just going to rely on my dogs to stay on a trail, and I'm just really excited to be here. I've been wanting to run this race for a long time, and the opportunity arises, so I'm here. We're ready to race.
Fan favorites Didi Jonro and Lance Mackey are back for the Cusco, along with 6 YK Delta mushers. First on the trail will be Ken Anderson, departing alongside Brent Sass. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The Federal Subsistence Board meeting is Wednesday, January 21st through Friday, January 23rd, 2015 at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center in Anchorage. The meeting is open to the public either in person or by teleconference. Public comments and input on the proposed changes to federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations is being sought, along with specific fisheries proposals. Meeting materials found at regulations.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Annie Feit. This week on AK, starring. Last week's Russian Christmas in Unalaska looked a little different than elsewhere in the state. Over the years, the town has evolved from a native village into an industrial hub. Now it has miles of roads and thousands of residents from countless different faiths. So the little congregation of the oldest Russian Orthodox Church on the continent has had to evolve too. KUCB's Annie Ropeek has more on how their Slavic has become a community celebration.
In Unalaska's historic downtown, Christmas time means almost every building is strung with lights, all but the Orthodox Church, which sits at the back of the neighborhood. Its green onion domes date back 200 years, standing out in a skyline of cargo cranes and seafood plants. Outside the church, you wouldn't know it's Christmas until early January, when a rare sound rings out across the island. The church bell tolls over about 15 worshipers singing a set of Russian and English carols in the sanctuary. They're grouped around a pair of spinning wooden stars, each a few feet across and strung with lights, bells, and tinsel. This starring ceremony will repeat dozens of times in the next few nights in kitchens and living rooms across town. But the biggest, newest part of the holiday came earlier in the day. At least 100 people packed into the local senior center for a community Slavic potluck. The meal only dates back about 15 years, designed to give the elders a starring in the daytime.
Meaning of the celebration of the nativity of Christ, the starring is, you know, we're going out to proclaim the birth of Christ, and the stars that we're spinning is a star that which the wise men followed. And so, you know, the stars we're spinning and we're singing and following the star which leads us to Christ.
That's Father Ivan Bereskin, the Orthodox priest for Unalaska and several nearby villages. From here, he says they'll spend 3 days starring in people's homes. These days, that can include longtime Unalaskans who aren't actually part of the congregation. But the list for the second night is all churchgoers. The group that will bring the star to them is bigger than the one at the church. They meet at Father Bereskin's apartment for coffee and brownies, then try to figure out who's next and spread the word via text message.
Okay,
who wants coffee?
We're going to go to Monty's, Shirley's, Vicky's, Jenny's.
Lifelong Unalaskan Sharon Savarni Livingston is one of the starring group. She says this part's changed a lot since she was little, when the town looked more like the villages that celebrate Slavic in the rest of Alaska.
In all those other places, you walk with the star all over the whole town, you know, so that creates a different feeling. Here you got to drive and make, you know, if you're working and you don't get off until late, you got to try to find the star, so which can be really difficult sometimes. It's easier now with cell phones, but...
The congregations also had to condense some over the years, with many parents now raising their kids to celebrate two Christmases, American and Russian. Svarni Livingston says they've had to work harder to pass on the traditions.
We kind of went through a period where we really had to teach the young kids the songs and stuff and get the group together again, and we just all started going in one group, and we just kind of stayed that way. That's what's really changed.
The single star they're using now is thought to be their oldest, made about a century ago in the native village of Kashiga, which was abandoned during World War II. Tonight, that star, as big as a small child, gets a ride in one of the SUVs caravanning up the road to the first houses on the list. Then it crowds into Vicky Williams' living room with its entourage of carolers. The starring always ends the same way, with a blessing of long life for the people who live in the house.
Many years to all, many years to all, to the people in this house.
Thank you.
Vicky Williams wears a big smile, standing in the middle of the crowd and thanking all her friends for coming as they file out.
I feel like I'm having my house blessed when they come here. You know, with the cross and stuff, you know, with the star and stuff. I'll see you again.
Yeah, we'll be here for a while fishing. So.
Okay. And bye, guys. Yeah, it's like having your house blessed again, you know.
Around her, the room has emptied out as quickly as it filled. The starring group is heading back to their cars. They've got lots more houses to get to before the night is over. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Sleepmute, a small community east of Bethel on the Kuskokwim River.
I'm Gladys Frederick. My position is Tribal Council President. There was always a town here. It is very beautiful. We have white snow on the ground. We have thousands and thousands of birch trees and pine trees all over. We have a hill across the Kuskokwim River. There is very few jobs, and the few jobs that there are, the same people hold them. There's usually only seasonal. We have a tribal administrator job, bookkeeper, a clerk, IGAP. We have health aid job open. We have a postmaster. We have a cook and a janitor at the school. I would say it has changed, but we practice our subsistence way of life. You know, we depend on the food here by gathering. We have to use planes, barge, or during the summer by the river and just go to the next town. We're looking forward to a new Cottonwood Road and a couple of homes. This road is mainly for the expansion of the houses that we want to eventually build.
Gladys Fredericks is the Tribal Council President in Sleepmute. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Annie Ropeek, Ashley Snyder, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Annie Feit.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Alan Lockyer in the Mat-Su Valley and Ben Matheson in Bethel. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Ann Hillman. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by ASHNA, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Alaska Pacific University offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University is a private nonprofit offering small class sizes with a student-centered approach in the arts and sciences. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.